How was school?
Worst day of my life. What do you think?
Well, I want you to go see if Tina wants some of this.
Kip hasn't done flipping anything today.
Look, tonight me and your... Kip, listen.
What?
Tonight me and your aunt are going to go visit some friends, and we're not going to be back till tomorrow. We're getting a little low on steak, so I got Lyle coming over tomorrow to take care of it.
Well, what's there to eat?
Knock it off, Napoleon. Make yourself a dang quesadilla.
Fine.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Muskies on Tap. Welcome to episode 104. I am one of your hosts tonight. There might be an unknown number. We might have a drop in later on. Not sure. Don't want to make too many promises. But the co-host on here tonight, if you will, guests as well, are going to be Matt Vavrock and Taylor Flannery. As of right now, Brian is not on the line. Max is also not on the line. So I myself am home holding down the fort. But we got a lot to talk about because we had a nice trip down to Iowa, Taylor and I, to spend some time with Matt and his family, even though they had a pretty hectic household, which maybe we'll get into a little bit here. But let's introduce them right off the bat. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on again, dude. I really appreciate it. It was a blast having you guys down in the home state for a while. Despite the end of the trip getting progressively more hectic as it went on, but it was still a ton of fun.
Right. Do you want to enlighten the listeners? For those that don't know, this is Matt Vavrock with Vavrock Fishing on YouTube.
Well, so as Gus and Taylor's trip and hanging out with me was kind of winding down, Callie's pregnancy was ramping up, so... The weekend that Taylor and Gus left my residence, we had a child. So Wilder James joined us very early on Sunday. So we had a May 4th baby. So we got a Star Wars baby, which is pretty dope. Those of you who know me know that I'm a nerd. So worked out well.
That's sweet. I know you're kind of rooting for that the week leading up.
But he and Callie are both really happy and healthy, so that is just great. Feeling very thankful.
That is awesome. Congrats again on that, and of course many thanks to you and Callie and your household for having Taylor and I down in Iowa for a little bit of fishing, which we'll get into. But the other man on the phone we had on not too long ago, and also a guest that we've had on in the past, is none other than Taylor Flannery with Muskie Guarantee Guide Service. How are you doing tonight, Taylor?
I am doing absolutely wonderful. Glad to be back on with you guys again, talking it up. Get to reminisce on a absolutely incredible week in Iowa once again that Callie had to selfishly ruin with the birth of a child and blow up our whole weekend. No, it was great down there. Spent some time with Gus in the boat a whole week. So if you can get along with somebody in a boat for a whole week, you know, you're probably buddies. We were looking forward to seeing Matt that weekend, but unfortunate events in the fishing part of it happened, and they had to do other things that were more important than us. And it was still fun to be down there and spend some time with them. And happy to have casted a musky rod again.
I'm glad I still got Friday with you guys that weekend. That was pretty dope. Despite us making the HOA here really upset with me, because apparently
that was funny.
Apparently the Camus is just too big for our little slice of Iowa City.
Yeah, we're going to have to find out a different arrangement for that so I don't get my whole rig towed next year, but
I don't know. We'll figure it out. It'll be fine.
Right. Yeah. Well, anyways, I know. So you guys were already fishing and had a little bit of, muskies in the bag and stuff going on, but I myself actually dropped my brother Max off in Madison. We spent the night after getting home from Cave Run. And I drove, the truck and boat right over to Iowa City and kept it at Matt's in-laws and was hopping in Taylor's boat for the week. So he was gracious enough to give the space. And like he said, if you can fish with somebody for a week and not want to strangle them by the end, you know that you're good fishing buddies. I know you maybe did almost once, maybe. We'll get into that. They're not there yet, but I brought it up first, so it's okay. But no, I met up with you guys on Monday, and it was blowing like, well, as Tadpole would say, I can't say it on here right now, but it was blowing pretty hard that Monday that I met up with you guys, which is pretty typical Iowa fashion. Is that kind of like a weekly occurrence, Matt, would you say, in Iowa, where it's just blowing 30 plus miles an hour?
Yeah, just it depends on the time of year, but it's like always in the cards. And then just being flat and full of corn, there's not really a whole lot to break it up. So it can be kind of tough and kind of miserable at times. That was like on the higher side of things, not necessarily within the norm. Like anywhere between like 10 and 20 miles per hour is pretty normative for any time you're out in the spring. But that was pretty well north of that, especially some of those gusts. If the Camus was getting blown around, whipped around a little bit in the wind, it's strong.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, either way, I know I hopped in and you guys actually already had a fish in the bag. I don't know if you kind of want to describe that. There's also some videos out anyways of you catching on a particular lure that I don't know how much you want to talk about at all, but
Well,
we'll for
I
sure
think.
talk about more of his baits too.
Yeah, I mean, Brady said I can kind of chat about that one, and I don't think it's a huge secret because I asked him when I don't know if I made a comment about it or something, and kind of like purposefully let the cat out of the bag, kind of sort of, because he kind of gave me the okay on it. So if not, I guess Brady can get mad at me later. But yeah, so he's got like a prototype of the Bam Bam. I don't know if it's going to be like the mini or the micro or what he's going to call it, but I knew that that was in the works when I talked to him. Jeez, I don't know. I had him on my YouTube channel and we did a live together.
Must have been the winter.
And yeah, so it would have been early winterish, probably December or early January. And he showed me one that he was working on. I was like, that would absolutely crush in the spring here. And so he got me a couple to use this spring, and lo and behold, the muskies certainly like them here in the spring. It's just that perfect little, like, 5 to 8 inch profile that they want right after they get done spawning. And yeah, it's got my biggest fish on it this year. I don't know if I still have the belt on that one or not. The 40 incher that we got on it's not going to last long, but for now,
Yeah, you
I've
know.
got the belt.
There you go, reigning the champ. Yeah. No, it's pretty cool. I was quite impressed with that bait. And about Iowa, you must or people must hear like, oh, you go down there and whack a bunch of fish, but it's not common to see super big fish. I know we got to kind of wrestle a little bit with a few that week. Mostly see the larger fish, but the one you got before I showed up on Monday, I would say is quite a nice fish for down there in Iowa that put up a really
Yeah,
good fight.
totally.
So,
I mean,
yeah.
technically it's a legal fish here. I mean, anything north, like 40 and above, is a legal fish. So, I mean, I guess that would be what the class or the DNR would classify as big. But yeah, no, I was pretty happy about that one. Really, really spicy 40 inchers. So that was fun. And Taylor gave me a bunch of crap because I was shaking. I was like, if you're not shaking, then why are you fishing for them? Even if they're 40 inches, Taylor, you can give me all the crap you want.
Yeah, you were shaking so bad my graphs were shaking around. I couldn't even see them.
Oh my gosh.
Been a while since I got a good one, so I was just pumped about it. Pumped for Brady too, because I mean it's just validation. But that was like such an interesting fish, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this one, Taylor, but like a lot of those windows that we were experiencing were just like you could physically like feel when stuff was going to happen. And I know that musky fishermen talk about that a lot, but like Gus was saying earlier, the wind was just absolutely ripping, between 20 and 40 miles an hour. And we had this little spot where the wind shifted and changed, and it went from blowing really strong out of the north to going out of the south. But there was this little time in between where the humidity like just came in out of nowhere. Like you can see it in the picture. I'm like wearing a vest and like I've got a sweatshirt on underneath of it because it was chilly that morning. And then like after that fish, it was just hot. It was insane how quickly that weather like change happened. And I think, and you guys can add to that too, but a lot of the stuff, even with like Brian and Ben when they were here, you know, a lot of those ebb and flows of the weather were really what dictated your bite windows.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that 100%. Me and Gus saw it throughout the whole week fishing. I honestly would tell you that if you watch videos and whatnot, we called almost every time we caught a fish, just because it got warm or the sun would pop out a little bit or what have you, certain weather instances, and you could just feel that it was about to happen, and it usually did. Very, very, weird windows and weather patterns. We actually went one day, we went from catching a fish on a glide bait and they were slow to catching a fish on dive and rise and then catching fish on rubber, ripping it absolutely as hard as you possibly could. So throughout that day, which I'm sure we'll get into that one a little more, but it was just incredible the switch within a few hours, how those fish actually changed throughout the day and how we were catching them.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, the windows were incredible, and it almost like it was the feel of the weather on how you could predict how to catch them, kind of like you could totally feel in the weather like, okay, I have to go rubber or a crankbait or a jerkbait or a dive and rise, something that gets a little bit deeper. And then there's times where you know you'd had to rip rubber higher or keep a glide bait up higher. You could totally feel it. I mean, I know. So Monday when I met up, we did not have a ton of time. I raised some fish. If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, that day, just so maybe we can talk through it all. So, you know, the people listening can kind of get honestly a pretty good game plan, even for like the northern range, Minnesota, Wisconsin, that has these openers, and even southern Wisconsin that's already open is probably experiencing this, what would like a post spawn time frame. You know, in Iowa when we were there, it was post spawn muskies. We were working with ballpark of 60 degrees water temp, give or take. And what we saw on Monday to start our week, Taylor, is that the humidity just vanished, if I'm not mistaken. And we felt it get cold and really windy. And we were looking at a, what was the next day, Tuesday, was not a very high of a high, in like the low 60s or so, sunny, not a cloud in the sky, and cold in the morning. So we knew we were kind of in for a rough start to the week, possibly, or at least a grind, if you will. And that absolutely was the case. But I think we kind of tripped into a pretty good pattern that was fairly bulletproof, I would have to say, going into the next day, Wednesday. But Tuesday, with it being, I don't know, moderate wind, nothing crazy, ripped a few times, but high skies, we figured we had to go to jerkbaits, hard, you know, pull stop baits that could rise or just hang there, and got down in their face. So that's when we broke out, you know, the hammer jerk pretty heavily, which actually was a bait that I threw on immediately on Monday, and while the weather was changing to go to more of a post-frontal conditions, that was actually one of the only baits other than like a Navin or some other jerkbait to raise fish that Monday afternoon as the weather was changing. So we're like, okay, that's kind of probably the bait we need to work with. But that was just a difficult day entirely on Tuesday, Taylor, if you remember. That was an absolute grind.
Yeah, that was what real musky fishing is all about, Gus. We we can't. It's not all like you see on social media. Everybody's holding up their fish all the
No.
time, and oh yeah, we had a five fish day. That's not what it actually is. But no, we had tough conditions. We had post frontal. We had high skies. We had big wind. We had very dirty water, which I'm not 100% sure what that one was all about on that system, but it was. Very low visibility, very I would say what a foot visibility we had tops.
Yeah, it
And we
was
just
pretty
felt like we
nasty.
needed to get down and in their face and dig up their home, and that was our only way to probably get bit, and we ended up grinding one out. So like Matt said, musky fishing is just about how hard you're willing to work to get a bite, and that's what we did. So I do want to point out that Gus was gracious enough to put the hammer jerk down for a split second, and I
We
picked
can
it
talk
up.
about
And yeah, he's like, I guarantee you catch one in like 10 minutes. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
I think it was two casts, and
Yep. It
we
was.
actually crisscrossed lines, and we're like, oh, it's good, and then just drilled me. So it's kind of funny how that works out.
Was pretty funny. Yeah, you just posted that video not too long ago, of the hit and going into the net. You started off with the hammer, 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 hammer.
Hammer,
That's
hammer.
yeah. So yeah, the hammer customs hammer jerk really hammered him there, even though what would you say? I threw that what did you say, ballpark on 7 of the prior 8 hours of fishing?
Oh, absolutely. That, I mean, that's the bait that we had total confidence in, and that thing is just
Yeah.
wild. And yeah, as soon as you put it down, that's what happens.
Yep, that's true. I was yeah, I gave you the window of 10 minutes to catch a fish. It took you two casts, so that was a that was a nice little treat on an absolute grind of a musky fishing day, which I did get slapped by that bait, but we kind of thought after watching some more fish eat a little bit more closer to the boat or getting some more strikes, we did figure out that some of the fish were short striking through the week even. So I think there was
Well,
a
I
lot of
mean,
that happening.
when Taylor and I fished with Brian on that Sunday or whatever, right? I had that one that you lost on the nav and just bit the tails off of that Bowfin Junior, and I had one short strike it earlier in the day too. Just like didn't quite get it. I don't know. That was just kind of a trend. It's been kind of a trend this season. I can't tell you. I mean, I've posted some of the Rusty's Customs short strikes and like swings and misses, and it's just like I don't know why they do that sometimes, but they do.
They're getting educated.
Probably.
That's a yeah. That's the unfortunate part. But Iowa is well stocked and of course has a very solid fishery to fish. But no, that hammer jerk really shined on that post-frontal day, and we went in with more of an open mindset of what we were gonna do on Wednesday, Taylor. And it was pretty much a game plan of hit the I don't know if it was what we were exact. We kind of still needed to try and find a bite, but we knew that we needed to slow it down and kind of grind these fish out rather than ripping through a little bit faster than what you would think when the weather was warm, because it was still quite cold on Wednesday.
Was that the, I'm just trying to draw here. Was that the day that we were fishing like the wind blowing rocks and
Yeah.
okay. Yeah. And that was kind of a funny thing too, because that one went from the hammer jerk was getting, I mean, everything going, and then there was actually a point where it just stopped. And we kind of talked amongst us, and we decided that we needed to get something maybe down just a little bit deeper. And that's when I put on the top line dipstick, and it was a bigger profile even. And then that one had a little less, crazy wobble or whatever to it, and got down just a little bit and hung a little bit more. And that one got bit then within like 15 casts or so. So that was one where we just felt like, something had changed. And we needed to change it up, and it paid off again in that instance. So,
Yeah, you had some good instincts through the week, Taylor. I think you caught three fish after either sitting down and taking a breather or switching to a brand new lure, and that happens within a pretty quick amount of time. The two casts with the hammer jerk, brand new lure. I think it was for sure within 15 casts or maybe even like a 5 minute loop or something of my GoPro since you switched. And then you had another one as well when you switched to the Mini Dusa on the following day. So that was kind of like the instincts and what you just said. We talked about it, like, hey, the bite has kind of changed. You know, I had so much action on the hammer jerk and a lot of fish going on it. I caught multiple fish that day on very odd windows, which we kind of alluded to earlier. We never had a tight bite window very often through the week. It was typically in like 2 to 3 hour intervals. And it was very, very weather orientated and not particularly moon orientated because we were kind of coming off of a new moon, I want to say. I think it was New Moon Sunday. I remember driving back from Cave Run. And typically leading up to, you know, big major moon events, a lot of times fish feed pretty heavily. And when you get a post new moon and post frontal, we definitely were working with some finicky fish, and that kind of might be part of it as well. But no, we figured out that we really needed to get down to them because it was probably that Wednesday was probably the last day of the true post-frontal conditions being like at their harshest or coldest, because it really never got warm that day at all. I don't think I ever took the hoodie off or even the bibs. Just in low 40s in the morning. So yeah, we really had to get down to them. So we really utilized, you know, the baits that we had to not just try and grind away at the one bite we thought that they were going after, but instead switch it up. And that's how we got some more fish.
Yeah, and that's I kind of want to give Gus a little shout here. And you know, it kind of enlightens me as to why he is so successful in the tournament scene. For me personally, I have never really shared a boat with anybody that I can really pass on and for that I can really like talk, you know, information with and pass ideas back and forth and kind of figure out a game plan between the two of us and what we believe is going to work and execute that plan and make it happen. It's usually people are asking me, you know, what should happen, what should be the thing. And it was very interesting to me to dive into Gus's mindset as well as to what he was thinking and why he was doing what he was doing. And it actually, you know, matched mine pretty well. So I do feel like we fished very well together and we complemented each other in the boat. But to me, I believe 100% that that's why you are as successful as you are in the tournament scene because you have to adapt so quickly and on the fly as to where the changes are and make it happen. And I mean, for instance, we went from a shallow bite to we were out jigging, what, 25 feet of water because that's what we thought we had to do. And in an instant, you went right to it, you know. And there's not many people from northern Wisconsin that I know of that are willing to do that. So that was kind of cool. Even though it didn't pay off in that instance, it was still cool to, you know, to see that you had no quarrels with doing something outside of the box. So I compliment you on
Yeah.
that.
I really appreciate that, Taylor. And yeah, I think I know I probably learned that really well, honestly, with my brother. He's not on the phone right now, but I think he would agree. I think the reason that we can kind of put some bites together in tournaments and whatnot is honestly communication and just, you know, obviously entirely you have to kind of know what's going on. You kind of need to know the bite. You have to have a semi-successful pre-fish, and that doesn't always mean catching fish or even necessarily moving fish, but you got to be able to communicate to know when the bite is going to change and have game plans and really stick to your guns, basically. And yeah, Taylor, I'd have to say we definitely meshed very well, and I think that Wednesday, with even on paper being difficult conditions, we put some nice fish in the boat and multiple fish in the boat that day, and even had multiple other chances. So I felt like that was a true testament there. So great work.
I think you guys touched on something really important there too, like being complementary in the boat or complements to one another in terms of like angling. I think like muskies are so hard, and it's very rare that you get to the point where you've got an established pattern that you're working off of, to where if you're complementing one another throughout the day or with presentations or whatever the case may be. That's only going to try and it's only going to like provide more opportunities for different presentations that those fish are able to see. And like being able to play to one another's strengths is absolutely huge. I mean, obviously you guys are like very well established anglers and stuff, but even that said, like you probably have things that you prefer to lean on more. Like I know Taylor loves his rubber program. Gus, I know you love your dive and rise program at times, but you're no stranger to rubber. Same with Taylor. I know Taylor talks about Suics all the time. So I think it's just being able to complement one another in the boat in those ways. And then like piggybacking off that even more, if you enjoy the time that you're able to spend with those people in the boat, then it just like amplifies that level of success. And then, you know, PMA reigns and then you catch fish. I think that's how it works, right?
I think that is definitely how it works. PMA is very important, but we found out that you do have to get a little, you got to yell at the muskies a couple of times. You can't be too positive. Taylor taught me
Sometimes, yes.
that. I like to be cheerful and hopeful that something's going to happen, but Taylor's like, sometimes, nah, you got to talk back to him.
This is very true.
Then Gus
that'll
is
get
the
him to.
most positive musky angler I've ever seen in my life. He's like, it's gonna happen. It's gonna be right now. We're gonna do it. Let's go, team. And I'm like, fuck those muskies.
They do suck
So
sometimes. God damn.
that brings me to another question. So like this weekend, it was like high skies and kind of miserable out and very post-frontal, and you guys are talking about some of your strategies post-frontal. But you guys being in the guide game, doing this longer than me, yes, tournament style, sometimes too. Like what is your guys' go-to when stuff just isn't happening? Like if the fish are just lazy, like we saw plenty of fish, they just weren't doing anything. And you know, each day we got one bite and we got one of them, and then the other day we didn't get that fish. And it's like, you know, what do you do? How do you guys attack those days? Because you don't get to pick them in the Northwoods. I mean, generally speaking, there's more weather and stuff that happens up there than down here, especially that time of year. But like, you know, how do you both approach those things when they happen and it's far from optimal conditions?
That's, I would say that first off, on post-frontal days, your timing is everything. I always try to attack a post-frontal day right bright and early in the morning and hit that first sun or sunrise window, before basically before the fish figure out that the weather's changed and that it's not going to be a great day. Usually your bite is that first hour window of the day, and then after that you are just moving slow, methodical, picking apart structure, looking to see, where your bait fish is at in the water column, and you're trying to get your bait down into their face and sitting there for as long as possible. That is, to me, one of the best, go-tos for that, or just completely shredding their home, ripping rubber through as hard as you can. That's about it. So,
I would agree with
yeah.
that strategy.
Tapping rocks, tapping wood, tapping weed tops with yeah, whether it's rubber or jerk baits, I completely agree. I think you're right on point to what I was gonna say entirely is it's really just slow down, and you already touched on that, so I'll add kind of to that sense is I'll actually condense how many spots I fish and how much of the spot I fish. And I probably am going to pick a body of water that I have the most waypoints of a lake that I know extremely well that I can really pinpoint down to almost the cast or two on where a muskie should fly out of. And it's honestly, I think you can find this happen in early season, mid season, and late season. You got to try a little bit of really shallow and a little bit of pull out a touch, and don't hug the weeds or rocks too much. I've seen them do both cases in the spring. It's hard to say. Yeah, I guess I would just leave it at I've seen both cases of where they have slid out, especially midsummer. If you have an established lake that is well past like 4th of July time frame, and it's definitely in midsummer, that lake, a cold front actually sometimes brings them off, depending on how deep your weeds go. And that is typically a hang in their face crankbait, dive and rise, and rubber that doesn't always hop too much, but still, I don't know, rip the rod pretty quickly because you do kind of want to have a reaction strike. The Muskies are not going to be moving that far and fast. If the weather stinks, you just got to slow it down and keep the boat moving at, for sure less than like 0.8 miles an hour. Probably go down to like a half a mile an hour and really pick apart the spots and sometimes even fish them twice. That's kind of where the tournament side of me kicks in. And we did that a lot, Taylor, as we approached same spots with either different lures, different time of day, or at a different depth. And we saw some success come out of it. And that is right down to a T of basically tournament fishing in tougher conditions. If it's good conditions, I'll buzz around and do a little bit more spot picking and running more spots. But definitely condense the spots to for sure what you know. It's not a search and rescue type of day.
And I'll kind of add to that as well a little bit. Like, I won't say that I, do less spots in a day on a tough day, because I kind of tend to fish that way anyways. I will prefer to fish four spots on a lake very, very well and just continuously pound those spots inside, outside, slow as I can and methodical as I can. As And like Gus said, it's a tournament strategy, but I've said this before, I feel like every single day on the water guiding is a tournament. I want to catch a fish every single day, and that's the best strategy I know how to do it, versus running and gunning and hitting every spot in the lake where you very well could have hit, the best spot outside of the feeding window, and then you never get back to it until 5 hours later after you've hit another seven spots. And maybe that fish has already passed, or somebody else has already come into that fish and moved it off its spot. So I tend to limit my spots that I hit throughout the day, most days anyhow.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's especially like up in northern Wisconsin when I'm up there, you have these like vast weed flats and it's like this beautiful broadleaf green cabbage. And the spots themselves are enormous. But like something that I've had to work on over the last few years, just like with limited time on the water, is just knowing, like the whole spot is good. The fish could be anywhere on the spot, but just being more efficient with my time, whether that's working those spots more quickly or picking the spot on the spot to try and see what's going on to gauge activity level, to gauge what those fish might be interested in, or seeing if bait is present there, whatever the case may be. But that's I kind of relate to what you guys are saying on that front, especially up there. And down here, I think like the biggest thing is like one of the golden rules of muskie fishing. If a spot is worth fishing, it's worth fishing more than once. And that's something that, I do all the time. You guys saw it too. It's like, you're not, you're very un, it's very unlikely that your bait will be the first bait that those fish see on a given day. It could very well be, but whether it's a bass guy or panfish guy, whatever the case is, there, or even another muskie guy. Our lakes just have a lot of pressure down here from a lot of different people because we just don't have a lot of lakes. And you just got to be comfortable fishing behind people and be willing to, like Taylor said, try different things, experiment with different strategies, because the reality is there are, you can catch fish behind people. You just gotta do it and
You
hit those
gotta,
spots more than once.
yeah, you gotta have in your mind that, like, not the mindset of, damn it, this person's ahead of me. It's probably gonna catch all the fish. You kind of have to have a selfish mindset, like, we are doing it better. We're using the right baits. We're gonna, it's all, PMA to make
That's right.
yourself work the bait better. I mean, if you're in a grumpy mood, you're not gonna work the bait better, and you might be slacking, and then boom, you get hit, and you're not paying attention, and that's just kind of what happens sometimes.
Yeah, I
But
mean, the goal is to hijack that fish's lateral line in those moments, and you just have to, like you said, be better at it, like, or think that you're better at it, even if it's just like the placebo effect, I'm going to rip the rubber harder and try and trigger that fish to do something that it doesn't want to do right now and hope that
yeah.
that's the time that it decides to activate versus the, two or three other boats in front of you. Just
Taylor,
how it works.
how do you think we got that fish's lateral line to come out and check out that lure when a fish was already following it at said lake on Wednesday when we caught some? and drifting downwind. Remember when I had that one nose in it at it, like a nice low 40s, and then all of a sudden, Miss Queen Bee comes out of the woodwork after dragging a hammer jerk behind the boat, drifting downwind, and just kind of
50
tapping it,
yards.
letting a fish mouth it, and then a bigger fish kicked it out of the way and came after it for a second and then burned off. That was quite crazy. I haven't had a double follow quite like that. That was pretty cool to see.
Yeah,
That's
that was
wild.
awesome. I think that on that big fish's part was more so a curiosity killed the cat kind of affair. I think that that fish saw that that other, I mean, that was probably what a 42, 43 incher come up on it first and was playing around with you and obviously was not hot, didn't want to do anything with it. But I think that that bigger fish, which was all of 47, probably saw something happening up there and just out of curiosity came up to look at it because she wasn't going to do anything either. It was just basically scared the other one off. And then she, went down into the abyss and she was gone forever. We never saw her again either. So I think that was strictly curiosity there.
Yes, absolutely. I think I agree there that unfortunately we did not get to see that fish again, which I don't know if we want to touch on this at all with maybe the musky movement or kind of the type of spots that we're fishing. I don't know how much we want to brush on that, but I think that was another interesting thought that I think can be very, very beneficial, honestly, to us coming up on musky opener in the Northwoods, which hopefully we'll be getting some good post-spawn fish that are hungry. But they were quite, it was quite prevalent on exactly where these fish were. They weren't quite full on main lake, like main basin type areas, but they also weren't full on spawning bays. They were in the transition zones. So I don't know if some Matt or Taylor wants to jump in on that.
I mean, it seemed
Yeah.
like they were kind of just like funneling out of their spawning areas, and you were more or less picking them off as they were transitioning to deeper water. And where they would stage in that transition would just kind of depend on their mood. Feel free to add anything to that, Taylor, because I know you guys discovered some stuff with that like later in the week too.
Yeah, I think for the most part, Gus, you and I kind of came out with that together as, just experience and time on the water kind of told us that that's where those bigger fish would be. We had seen, some, I mean, they're nice fish, mid 30 inch fish, but those fish, probably males, were all up in the shallow stuff and kind of doing what they were, used to doing. And we were, getting into them a little bit. And we just figured that without seeing the larger fish in the system, that they had to be starting to push out of those spawning areas, and they would have been in the deeper water. And we still actually had some crappies out in the deeper water that were pre-spawn, waiting to come into that area, into the shallows. So I think that those larger fish in the system were just holding off on that like second break area. And Gus and I discovered that, and we actually ended up popping my personal best. And Gus's personal best Iowa muskies with that exact same tactic, backing off, hitting windblown, right outside of the spawning bay kind of areas. And yeah, it paid off for us. And we actually ended up seeing quite a few upper echelon kind of fish for the Iowa waters. And it was quite a time. So.
That was good to see, and it kind of, confirms something that I've always kind of thought about, is that if you truly are pushed up on the fish a little bit too much, where you're, quote unquote, sitting on the fish, they sometimes just don't ever want to come to the boat, especially if it's tough conditions. If you're already, I mean, you see it even like smallmouth and walleye fishing, other fish, like fish spook from the boat. If you drive over the top of them, they're not super happy. Obviously, our goal is to cast to them and have them eat out in the cast or follow to the boat and then eat and have them revved up enough to eat there. And we definitely saw where our baits weren't necessarily landing super deep and staying out deep. We were just pulled off slightly a little bit more and having our baits land at a just a slightly different depth and maybe getting a different angle at these fish that were definitely getting hit on by other anglers that whole week and whatnot as they do. Because like Matt said, Iowa doesn't have a ton of fisheries and their lakes aren't all super large by any means. So the spots are smaller. So you got to just fish them a little bit differently and find out where the bigger fish are if you're not finding them initially.
I think Taylor, you touched on something important there too that I want to say sometimes gets overlooked. I'm sure that it doesn't probably get overlooked by everyone, but like the timing of panfish and like knowing what the forage is like huge. Obviously, you can't like time it out perfect, but I think like guess what you were saying with Northern Opener coming up and like Southern Opener not being open that long. You know, have those crappies pushed up, you know, into the shallows because whether those crappies are pushing up or the bluegill are pushing up, and what those bait fish are doing will impact those muskie movements. I mean, the muskies aren't going to move any further or any faster than they need to find food. And a lot of times, what I've noticed with our spring bite is it's related to those panfish movements at times. Like you'll see more of those bigger fish in more accessible areas if those panfish move up within a time frame that is closer to those. You know, muskies moving out. There's obviously no one has any control over that, and it's just completely, totally, you know, weather dependent and seasonally dependent. But those are variables that definitely impact those muskie movements and how quickly they either vacate spaces or how long they tend to linger in those spaces. And obviously, not all forage is created equal. Like if you're like you're not going to have those same kind of movements in a lake that has you know, shad as their primary forage. You're gonna have a totally different movement in a lake that has just panfish and knowing what those panfish are doing, and not really having some of the pelagic or rough fish as forage.
Before we leave that topic, I just want to say that being on the water, like doing the crappie thing and the walleye thing and whatever the last, couple of weeks up in northern Wisconsin, seeing what I've seen on the water for water temps and with the musky spawn, I would tell you that for northern opener, it would probably not be a terrible idea for those of you getting out to actually fish those second breaks and the outside spawning areas and the deeper water. I believe that you are going to have your bigger fish in the systems are going to be about at the same point as what we're talking about here with our trip down to Iowa.
That's actually what I was going to touch on that I said I had a brain fart. I wanted to say, like, you just recently tangled with a muskie when you were crappie fishing and you were totally following, you know, the movements of the crappie where you said you were on them. You told me like, hey, we caught a bunch of crappie or whatever, and then we caught that muskie. While crappie fishing, obviously it ate a crappie. But if you're on a bunch of crappie, that means you were with the masses of the crappie, not just like the first couple coming up to try and spawn. So that's why that muskie was following, which I think is purely why we got the bigger fish in Iowa slightly deeper, because there were people on shore catching crappie, but they weren't catching a ton, and we, you know, marked them on side image and saw them, you know, popping the surface off of the break or off of the weeds when we were in Iowa. But I completely agree as well, Taylor. You know, I think a lot of fish are going to go post spawn up north here. The shallow stain, the smaller ish, the medium ish sized lakes should have that going through pretty good. We're working with a couple more days of warmth, but when this podcast comes out, I'll check again maybe. Well, one of you guys are touching on something on the weather app, but we are going to get a cold front up north. And last I saw was like 6 days in a row of lows in the mid 30s and highs in the mid 50s up north, which is going to put a little bit of a halt on the accelerator that we just had up here. And with my recency that I can touch on, is that I went to go check out some deep clear lakes and a smaller one. There was a bunch of males in the shallows. I didn't see what I thought to maybe be a female, maybe one. None of them were doing the thing. They probably were waiting until night since it was so sunny that day. And then I went to a much larger and much deeper clear lake, and I only saw one in the shallows. And then I marked a queen bee on side image that was definitely waiting to get into the bay to spawn, like a very prominent spawning bay. but she was out in like 15, 20 feet of water on the windblown stuff, rather than the North Shore on a north wind day. So I thought that was interesting. I've discussed with some people, and Taylor, correct me if you think there's another way around it, but those deep clear lakes might be in an odd spot. If we keep really cold weather going into opener, we probably can still get some pre-spawn fish on the really big clear lakes. But if it heats back up, I feel like the lakes that didn't get the fish to start spawning up here are going to be right around Memorial Day weekend, which is going to be tough. So it might be a classic smaller lake, medium lake, shallower type system, not necessarily stained, because there's clear shallow lakes up here too, would be the target. And they probably will be more in the transition zones rather than way up tight. Not that you can't get them in 2 feet of water, but I think working outside of the bays and something a little bit deeper, still looking for the new weed growth. That's coming up soon. I don't know how much you've seen at all, Taylor, up here on weed growth. It's making its way. It's not as hot and heavy as it was last year with the low snow and the early ice off, but it's coming back.
Yeah, I think Mother Nature always balances itself out, and with the amount of sunlight and penetration that we have had, this especially this last week, I'm sure that the weeds are going to be, up and doing their thing. I think they are just a little bit behind, what they would usually be at this time, but certain bodies of water definitely have, the weed growth is coming up and it's starting. So we've been hooking a little bit of weeds here and there, on the walleye jigs and all that good stuff. So yeah, I'd say it's gonna end up right where it needs to be.
That's good. Matt, how do you think the weeds are in Iowa this year? Because you had a nice season.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our lakes have that invasive curly leaf pondweed, which I don't have any issues with. I know that certain homeowners on certain lakes probably aren't huge on it and those kinds of things, and I know that it gets treated from time to time, but I mean, it eventually like dies off once the water gets too hot. So like any gripes that people have, it's just like, okay, we'll wait a month and let the young of the year and all of the little fish grow up. And also like selfishly, those weeds put, because it's the only weeds that our lakes really have. We don't have natural lakes. We don't have natural weeds. So selfishly, it puts the muskies in very predictable locations, and that's pretty handy for trying to target fish, especially, it seems like when those weeds are up, and that water temp is starting to climb, they prefer the weeds over almost any other type of structure if the weeds are present. I'm not saying that that's always the case, but it seems to be, and I don't know if that's the extra oxygen that the weeds provide or whatever, but or if they just muskies like weeds and that's just what muskies do. But as far as weed growth down here, it's pretty normative. I don't think, like, at least the lakes that I've been on this season, it seemed pretty normal. I mean, there's some places where it's more choked out than normal, some places where it's slightly less choked out than normal, and I would imagine that just ebbs and flows with your water bodies, and I'm sure you guys see that up north too, because I know that I do, on the lakes that we fish in northern Wisconsin, so.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely does. And it does change year to year. And that kind of changes actually the waypoints of the muskies. And I was going to kind of ask this too, or I'm sure you already saw it. And we did that week, is that it kind of changed where the muskies were when we were finding them in some of the weeds that Taylor was pointing out to me. There's certain areas that changed. Because my only other time fishing Iowa with you was last year pre-spawn in end of March, which is completely different ball game. I mean, we fished one of the same lakes, and I was like, "Holy crap, man!" We were like way back there, and like there wasn't
Like you
even an
can't even get
ounce of
back
a
there now.
weed. Yeah, there was zero weeds in there. Now we're looking at mats up to the surface, and it was a completely different ball game. But still moved a couple little guys out of that
Oh yeah.
really, really thick stuff.
Well, I mean,
Got
I
out,
think it's
little
just
bastard. That was hilarious.
I think some of it is just like it just serves as a funnel. And I don't think from my experience, and you guys can confirm or deny from your experience up north, but they really don't like to be where it's completely choked out. They may in like right after they're done spawning, I've seen them sit on top of it, but like where it's super choked out, that's not really where they want to be. They want to be in the kind of like sparse zones where, you know, they can have the advantage and be ready to ambush. I don't think that that they can really do that in the just complete mat and forest. So finding those zones is usually a good way to go. And I'm sure you guys found plenty of those while you guys were down here. And like, you know, like Taylor said, or maybe it was you, Gus, like it puts those fish in really predictable locations to where you can basically like cast to them and be like, there's probably going to be one here. And I know Taylor had a spat online with some guy about that this week who thought he was live
Oh,
scoping
man.
it. And I was just like, man, that is the most ignorant
Geeking
thing
out at that.
I've seen in a long time, because it's like, honestly, live scope in that situation, I could not be less effective in my opinion. Like, you might as well put on a pair of goggles and like put your head over the boat, and that might be just as good. I don't know. But like the way that the weeds set up this time of year and the way that the muskies sit in them, like you can predict where they're at, but the live scope isn't going to help you there.
I
That
absolutely get
was
a
funny.
kick out of the whole live scope thing. I do not own a forward-facing sonar unit, and I just refuse to fish that way. It's to each their own, but I enjoy, the good old musky fishing and the excitement of when you have a fish at the boat behind your bait and visibly see it. That's just me. And it's like when people are like, "Oh yeah, you're using your forward-facing sonar." To me, I mean, it's a compliment. It's like, yeah, I put myself right on where a muskie should be based off of my knowledge and my boat control. And thank you for the compliment. That's
Right. It
I
was
like
so
that.
goofy. I thought it was really funny on the one particular one. He thought your camera pole mount was your live scope mount, which cracked me up. Oh,
I know
man.
people even see a side imaging screen and they're like, "Oh, you're using forward-facing sonar." It's
Oh
like,
my
well, you don't
God.
even know what you're talking about, but okay. Thank you for your comment. Now move along.
It's wild.
I'll take my upped engagement now. Please stop talking.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, we figured out on the socials actually, no one gives a rat's ass about a video where you catch a muskie. They
Oh
love
no.
videos where you mess one up.
Oh
They eat
yeah.
that shit up.
Me as a muskie failure is 10 times more popular than me as a muskie success every time.
I had that one Gus that you ended up I had to eat a Rusty's Custom six sucker, and I ended up setting the hook, which looking at the video, obviously in real time it's different, but looking at the video, I should have held off on setting the hook and let that fish turn sideways with the bait. But it might not have ever done that, and it might have just spit the bait out, and it would have been a last year scenario too. But I had guys like never slow the bait down or never do this or whatever. And I'm like, the fish literally ate the bait. I got the fish to do what I needed it to do. Why are you telling me not to do what I did? Because it worked. It's just that the hook set was mistimed or not how it should have been. But fortunately, Gus ended up sticking that one in a absolutely crazy figure eight boat
Was
side.
so cool.
So that was really cool. Started ripping that thing around, and
Yeah.
she just went nuts on it.
That was a lot of fun. I mean, I have had my fair share, of course, you know, boat side action, and all the years of muskie fishing, I've caught plenty of fish boat side, but you know, Taylor enlightened me with some Iowa magic and kind of what to do with the jerk baits. And honestly, I was quite surprised with how cold the water was, is actually to not try and play that death pause game or just kind of a snap snap, let it sit there. It was almost like try and get them fired up around in the eight, almost like it was summertime, and that absolutely got them to go. Obviously, we had a few of our lazy follows that didn't do much of that, but we tried. The lazy follows just seemed to never even want to eat. It was just the fired up ones where you actually couldn't slow down. You had to speed up, otherwise they were going to just like nudge it or short strike or do something. You know, that one went full ballistic on it. And even the one that porpoised, that we you kind of shot forward and I waited to cast, and that one ate actually a mini beaver, and I was working it back fairly slow, and then I saw it show up behind it, and I'm like, oh, okay, here we go, and I do this big old circle, and it disappears like a summer fish, that's almost like staging to come up and eat it again. I bring it back towards the boat and then swing it out to the outside corner where you want all of them to eat. And he shot up right behind it and sucked it down and game on. So, it was really cool to kind of see that. But, yeah, the boat side maneuvers, you got to be kind of on point down there in Iowa. That seemed to be pretty, normal. I think I caught half of my fish in the figure eight, that last, week that we were down there 2 weeks ago.
Right.
I think you, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to ask, actually, ask Matt if, so we had a talk when we were in Iowa, and I think this will be beneficial to a lot of people. You had said something about your figure eights and that you maybe were giving up on them a little bit too early.
Yeah,
And
probably.
Gus and I had actually kind of both resonated with exactly what he just said with that beaver fish, as far as that fish took off hard. I mean, hard, where it leaves a swirl on top of the water that it darted so quick, and they actually reset up underneath that bait and come up and hit it then afterwards, where most people think those fish are gone. But if you give them, 5 to 10 figure eights, sometimes those fish come back, hotter than a whatever, and just blast it. So I think people give up on their eights maybe too soon in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I think that was definitely something I learned from you this time around, and definitely something I'm going to work to improve on because I am without a doubt guilty of that. I wanted to touch on something that you said too, Taylor, in terms of like when you're talking about that Rusty's custom and the fish just not getting it quite right. Like I had the exact same thing happen with a fish with me earlier this year, and I like slowed the footage down frame by frame, and like you can literally see it. It just has the glide bait by the eyeball. And like I set the hook and nothing happens because it never had the hook in its mouth. But like when you have the footage and you can slow it frame by frame, and it's kind of like that one that bit the tails off of that mini bowfin and then you stole it from me, which you've done before several times on the Navin, and it just came up and absolutely T-boned the thing, and you set the hook and you thought you were just kicking yourself the whole time, thinking like you did something wrong, and I'm just like, I don't think you did anything wrong. But it's one of those deals where I've had it happen here in Wisconsin and Canada. It's like you have those fish come in on just guns blazing, smoke your bait, and you just react to it because you really don't have time to do anything else. And I mean, you can replay it a million times in your head, but at the end of the day, you've got like that much time to react and. Sometimes it's the right reaction, sometimes it's not, and sometimes muskies just win. I don't know.
Right. I mean, you've been doing it for a while now, Matt, with your YouTube channel, and Taylor, you've gotten much more into it and myself, but filming yourself is actually really beneficial when doing figure eights or having, some sort of sky cam, and like what you've kind of had on, Matt, where you have like the upper chest or you have a head cam or something like that. And you don't need to buy a GoPro just to post videos necessarily or whatever you want to. You can do whatever you want, whatever your goal is. But I think a very good goal for starters, anybody getting into using a GoPro or whatever action camera they want to use, is to utilize the slow-mo and see what happened. You're going to see things that are either little minor details of mistakes that you made yourself, or you're going to find out musky behaviors like, oh, it really, like its tail kicked quite fast when I did this, or it nipped the tail and I set the hook too early, or it just nipped and that's just straight up what happened and there's nothing you can go about it. I mean, if it tried to eat and it missed half the bait where the hooks are and you set the hook, there's literally nothing you can do because in real time it ate the bait in your head, so you got to set the hook. And then at that point, it kind of is what it is. The fish goes away. And I know that happened a few times. Taylor, I actually stole two fish from you or assisted, whatever you want to kind of give it. That fish both ate one on the Rusties and one on the Bam Bam, where visually to both of us, they ate your lure, and visually you set the hook when they ate correctly, and they just in real time, or sorry, in slow motion, looking back at the footage, they didn't quite get it. Although, was it the Bam Bam or the Dusa fish that was very bizarre? I think it was the
That
Bam Bam
was
one.
no the well the Bam Bam
Was
one. I can't really like 100% see the footage, but
the Dusa one.
the Dusa, I mean, she set up perfectly outside corner. She absolutely T-boned it, headshot the thing, but she, for whatever reason, kind of turned downward and head shaked, and as soon as her head went to the right, I set the hook, and it actually just basically pulled the bait right from her mouth at the exact angle that she was facing at that point. And I actually set right perfect towards her tail. It was just that the weird whatever that she did ended up not getting hooks in her, and it was somewhat frustrating on the water. I'm sure Gus could tell I was a little upset. That was like the third one or something like that that did something like that, and I blame it on rust or whatever, but I mean, looking back at the video, it was like everything set up perfectly and the hook set was perfect, and it just, muskies suck. They'll win. That's what it is. So fortunately Gus did rebound two out of those three fish, and
With
we
the
were
hammer.
able to get him in the boat with the hammer time. So
The
that
hammer,
was pretty
hammer.
okay.
I'd
Yeah,
say so.
it is interesting slowing stuff down, because I remember there's one last year from the Northwoods where, and I had this happen in Canada too on a really nice fish, and I brought the growler around in the figure eight, and this fish comes up, you see its mouth open and it clamps down, but the rod never loads, so I never set the hook, and I'm just like, what, like how did the rod not load when that fish grabbed the bait? But then you slow the footage down frame by frame, and you can see that the fish just comes up and literally just grabs the bait or the blade of the growler, and then it's like what do? You're just hosed at that point, and but like without being able to slow it down and watch it back, you'd have no idea that like you would have thought that you messed up the whole entire time rather than it just be the fish.
Yep. Gotta freaking muskies. I don't know.
Stupid
I can't
fish.
wait to talk about them even more when it's open for us, but it already gets me fired up to be talking about them here and having some, good times in Iowa, even though it was up and down with the bites and the bite windows. Man, I've
But it
never
was.
personally seen on paper, looking at the weather going into each day, we like saw kind of what it was gonna be for the most part. It gave us the wind, it gave us like the highs if it was cloudy or not. But Taylor, that weather changed hourly or more. Like we saw it go from back and forth and back and forth, humid, not humid, take off your hoodie, start putting on more sunscreen, sun came out, sun goes away. And that was incredible. I know spring weather can be unpredictable, but holy shit, Iowa, come on, figure it out.
Yeah,
Find a
I'll say
pattern.
that, like, I'll say that, yeah, it's very up and down here, but the week that you guys were here, and like even the week kind of leading up to that, the just up and downs was just way more than normal, in terms of just the amount of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
See,
Well,
that makes it really fun when you do have to kind of change your game plan throughout the day though, and really rely on the things that you've learned over time, and to actually figure out a bite window and then change it so quickly and be able to actually make it happen, and kind of makes you feel good about, your knowledge and the things that you've done. So it was interesting.
No, I agree there. I really enjoy that part, and I think that's a lot to why we go after this fish is because they don't just take. I mean, yes, you can be mindless and kind of just take the day off and fish or whatever, fish however you want on your day of fishing, whether it's for muskie or whatever. But yeah, when you kind of like go really in depth, you can start to. I mean, I don't know. I think Taylor, as a team that week, and Matt, you kind of saw it when you hopped in the boat to start, and by the end, you probably maybe see, seeing a difference. The old chemistry, I think Taylor and I were starting to really think like a muskie. I mean, by that last day, we were pretty much like, they should be here. They're going to eat this. They're probably going to eat now before that rain comes and when the wind switches and the clouds come. And like it all just went boom, 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 right on.
It did work that just like you guys kind of called it out, planned it out that last day that you were here too. That last day I was able to fish with you. So, yeah, I don't know if you
Yeah.
want to talk about that one at all, Gus, or
I
how
think,
that
yeah.
transpired.
Yeah, I think we can definitely touch on the last day. I think the only thing we did not predict very well is the alarm that we set, and we're gonna get on the water and crack one first thing because they've been going first thing in the morning. All right, Matt, get up at 4:30, and we get out there and we don't see the first fish for, I don't know, an hour or two or more. It took a minute.
To be fair, though, we did not work that structure like we should have been.
No,
So
true.
we did go through and we took the time to auto chart, which is something that Gus, I know you do a lot of in the Northwoods. I do a lot of that in the Northwoods. We took the time to auto chart it, and then we were able to actually see how the lake laid out, and we were then able to, somewhat predict, what those fish were going to be doing. And actually, the fish that you had caught, we actually marked on side imaging off a hard to soft bottom transition while we were auto charting and put a waypoint on it, and you had casted right at that waypoint and stuck that fish on a Bam Bam swim fin. So that worked out perfectly how it should.
Yep,
Yeah, that thing
absolutely.
came unglued on that swim fin. And
That
yeah,
was nuts.
those things are cool baits. I'm very impressed with them. I didn't
I
get a
completely agree. So our initial thoughts are all the same, you know, Taylor, Matt, hi, Will. And we really liked the action of that swim fin. Like, holy crap, this is gonna catch muskies. But I was at least talking with Max, you know, going down to Cave Run with the colder water and kind of the post pre in the spawn type of fish we had there. We're like, I don't know, this might be a little erratic for down here, and we have ex you know 6-inch visibility in the water, so I don't know if an erratic hopping nose diving swim bait rubber bait is going to be the ticket. But then we go down to Iowa, you get cleaner water, and we started to have the bite that we figured out later in the week where you actually had to rip rubber like it was summer. That swim fin really shined. Ended up catching two that week on it, a small one, and then a very nice healthy fish with the three of us in the boat on Friday. And that particular fish, yes, Taylor side imaged it, and we came back to rework, you know, the structure a little bit differently. Actually, that was another little touch on. I think we added it to the video when you were videoing Taylor and I, Matt, where we were talking about that it was an inside out approach on that spot coming through, you know, kind of a funnel. Where the wind was pounding through and basically casting deep and bringing it up onto the flat of where the fish was. And I think that definitely pissed it off enough to have it. So this is another cool thing about slowing down the footage. That fish, I mean, you have to have like a keen eye and really be looking, but that fish, and I remembered it in real time, it actually came straight vertical right after a rip of the swim fin, where I think it tried to eat it, but I was probably ripping it a little bit too fast and it like brushed the tail. There's actually a nick in the tail, I remember looking, just a very minor one. So it brushed the bait, went straight vertical, and then did a big ol' U-turn after my next rip and just headshot it going the other direction. So my next rip was just full on rod load. And it's doing the slow head shakes. The bait, you know, it's on the front hook, the bait's out of the mouth, so that, you know, little cuts in the tail was from its first hit. And just like just missing it, doing what a lot of fish were kind of doing leading up. But since we're, you know, getting a rainstorm that afternoon and a wind pickup and cloud cover coming in, that fish was gonna eat no matter what. It was not
See,
taking no for an answer.
I had the exact same thing happen on Sunday, except for when it initially came up, it surprised me. So then when it tried to like eat it, I like ripped the other way and moved the rod too fast, and then it just caught the very end of the tail. And so I got a little tail rip too, and a lot of sadness. Not so much happiness.
Sadness.
Musky sadness. But
Yeah.
yeah, I agree. Ripping those things hard, it's just a really unique presentation. And just it kind of like with that profile too, like the longer profile. Like I know like your deuces and your dogs have a longer profile, and but it's just it's I don't know. I don't know how to really describe it or quantify it being more compact, maybe in kind of that swim bait package. I mean, when you're ripping it around, that tail is always moving. Like it does not stop. So it's yeah. I think that thing's gonna crush up north.
Absolutely. I think it has. So just like last year when the pit bull came out, and literally, I think I was saying on the podcast, I'm like, typically with a bulldog, you kind of have to maybe tune it a little bit. Like the pit bull was the first bulldog I took out of the package, started running, and boom, a topping left, right, good head drop, started catching fish right away. I'm seeing that in the swim fin immediately, and we got confirmation in pretty cold water that the fish seemed to love it. So I'm pretty stoked about that. I'll probably toss it a little bit with some confidence here on opener up north. But I just for sure know once it's late June, early July, and on, it's going to really shine. Absolutely.
Yeah, on Saturday we hit kind of a tough time, and I just put it on to mess with it because the mini bowfin wasn't doing a whole lot at that point in time. So I was like, well, maybe they just want something super aggressive, and it was like two casts, and I moved like a 40-incher with it, and I was like, what the heck is even happening on a day when they're not wanting to do anything? So that was pretty heartening to see, and gave me the confidence to keep chucking that, which I'll probably keep doing now.
Yeah. Absolutely. You
Oh,
got any
Callie's coming with a little guy.
Oh, nice. Get to see a little Wilder. Hey, buddy.
Oh, he's getting
I
up
know
there. He's
those can't
hungry.
see, but oh yeah.
Hi, guys.
Callie says
Hello.
hi. I've got my AirPods in, so you can't hear what she's saying.
Well, tell her hi back, and Wilder's looking great. Probably already going to be a musky fisherman, I can tell just by the name.
Yeah, I think Willow's excited to try and catch a couple this summer. We'll see.
Ooh, that'd be awesome. Has she made it out in the boat at all?
In the pontoon, I think, but not my boat yet. So we'll get her life jacketed up. I mean, last year she had just turned two kind of when we were up there. So I think this year, just with some more perception and just kind of awareness, I think it'll be a good time to kind of introduce her to some of those things. Not necessarily
Yeah.
musky, just like whatever to catch, but it'll be a lot of
Yep.
short-lived little trips, but it'll be fine.
Yep. When's your first trip to the Northwoods, Matt? Do you ever do kind of like that post-spawn Northwoods fishing, or do you get up there by the time it's a little more established?
It usually when it's more established, usually like middle of June-ish. There was one year we got up there the first week of June, and it was a colder year. And it took me way longer than it should have to find the fish, because I was just like, they're not where they're supposed to be. Well, yeah, because it was a cold spring, and like they're still very much relating to their spawning areas. So once I figured that out and started going to like 3 feet of water in like isolated little weed patches, then I started seeing fish and catching fish. Weird. I know it's very strange how that works, but it took me way longer than it should have to figure that out. But I was pretty green at that point too. I would say that was maybe like 21, maybe 20 or 21,
2021.
something like that. It was a while ago. I could look at
Sweet.
the picture.
Oh yeah. Well, that I don't know if you guys have anything else to add on about Iowa or our week down there, Taylor. Obviously it was a great pleasure sharing the boat and having you house us for the week, Matt and the team Vavrock.
We'll make it a
It's very
trend.
gracious.
It'll be fun. It's something that I look forward to every year, and I know that it kind of like is a lot to coordinate and plan with Callie and stuff, but it's something we look forward to, and it's like at the end of the day, it's like, 1 week or 10 days out of the year that we can offer our friends something totally unique, totally different that they don't necessarily get to experience in their neck of the woods. So we enjoy doing it. It's fun. It's cool. Even if the
Now we
HOA
get
really doesn't like us
to
doing
have birthday cake when they come down.
it. That's right. Yep,
That's
no
true. It'll
kidding.
be on the same time frame as May 4th,
Fortunately, like
probably.
fortunately, like most of the time, I think that this trip will find its place between the birthdays, which works out, I guess.
There you go. Always got to make a little time for some musky fishing.
That's right. Better watch out. One of these years, Willow will want to hop in with us, so get ready
Sweet.
for
Can't wait.
that. It'll be fun.
That'll be a lot of
But yeah,
fun.
how many did you guys end up with in the days that you fished? I mean, you guys are averaging probably what, two fish a day, something like that?
I think
Yeah.
it was 13.
I
Oh,
think
dang.
for Taylor's bow was 13, and I was a part of 11.
Nice.
Something like that.
Ish. Yeah. It was
That's
very
darn good.
solid, very solid week. I know
Yeah,
that you've
and
had better numbers, Taylor, in years past, but it was a good quality week. We had three over 40. No, yeah, we all got one over 40. It's very nice.
we had nice fish moving, and I think we actually kind of strapped ourselves to that, Gus, doing what we were doing. We were actually somewhat trying to target the bigger fish in the system versus,
That's
playing with all
true.
the rats that were up in the weeds and doing their thing. So, I mean, I'm not upset about that at all. I would rather chase a big
No.
bite, over a bunch of, upper 20s and low 30s any day. So,
Right. Yeah, it was kind of, we did move a couple, and thank goodness at the time we were probably throwing big enough baits that they didn't want to go after it. We'd leave those alone. If we moved like a sub 33 or 34, it was like, it's not particularly the one we want to go back on a weather event, or we're saving that for the big gals, the bigger waypoints, which maybe we'll try right out of the gate up north here, with the crew that I got, Max, Brian, and our buddy Jack. That's a lot of mouths to feed for getting muskies in the boat in a short 2.5 days. So I think we're gonna do a blend of action water and going after big fish. So we'll kind of just play around with that idea, but the season is upon us. I think we have one more podcast after this that comes out before our Northern Wisconsin Muskie Opener on the Saturday before Memorial Day. And I know I'm getting real pumped up. Taylor, are you doing the Green Bay thing? Or are you sticking up
No,
here?
not this year. I'll actually be doing a couple of walleye trips for opener of muskie. So
What?
yeah, that's part of the life, man.
Yeah.
But no, I'll definitely make it out, and I'll be doing my thing, hucking baits in the North Woods, and hopefully, with this cold front, that actually might kind of slow things down a little bit for the Green Bay guys. Otherwise, with the water
Yeah.
temps and the weather and the everything kind of skyrocketing, that might be kind of the devil's advocate for them as far as water temps going up too high and those fish pushing out of the tributary, somewhat similar to what they did last year a little bit early. So hopefully everything kind of slows down a little bit so those guys are able to get on a good bite down there. And yeah.
Yeah, because it's always fun seeing those giant opener muskie picks from Green Bay. Meanwhile, we're wrangling with 30 to 36 is up north, a possible 40 plus, and those guys are like, oh, here's a 52. Yep, here's a 54 and three quarters. It's like, oh man,
Yeah, just
what
insane
are we
fish.
doing? What are we doing? Before we get too into the outro or signing off or to a different conversation, I'm gonna kind of hop onto a screen share here and play some on the lines for you guys. So if you're wondering if like the screen goes a little bit differently, but
Oh
here
boy.
we go. Are you guys ready for your first on the line? Or no, Taylor, did we have you on once when we did these?
Yeah,
We
I
didn't.
was like a co-host and whatever, just mashing up.
Yeah. So here we got one on. We have two this week, and they're both from none other than poorly made Muskie memes. So let's let this first one fly. I think he goes a little bit more unhinged than his last ones, which was more of a normal question from a Muskie meme guy, but here we go. Oh, shoot. I just backed out of it. Let me try this again.
Is
Okay.
this the part where I tell everybody how bad you suck with a net? Because you're gonna have
Yeah, you can do that
to
actually. That's a great time. You talk
know.
while I do things.
Well, we're waiting, Taylor.
I didn't actually want to do that. So, whatever. So, to be fair,
Yeah.
Gus had a tight spot in between all the graphs and the camera pole and all that good stuff. But he went in because I was probably saying the fish was coming up. He went in a little too soon and fish was trying to take a run and ended up bumping her in the noggin with the net and as she was diving. And then at that point it was just too late. Gus had to commit to it. So
So
he did actually do a really good job of scooping her and scooping her and then scooping her and then scooping her while I was just gasping and yelling, Gus, 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 Gus. And he's like, this is not good. This is not good. So yeah, it was a stressful little, 10-second clip there, but it looked just like the PMTT video from Max and Gus that escaped
Flashbacks.
flashbacks.
So someone edit that together. Just the redemption.
Absolute redemption. I've had my fair share of scares. I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand with our, the famous line that you hear. It's like you catch more muskies, you're tangled with more muskies, you're gonna end up losing more muskies. So you net enough muskies in your lifetime, you're gonna end up having a goocher or two. Or more. Hopefully not, obviously. The more you do, the more practice you have and the better you get, but they're bound to happen. That was a new little area for me in your Camus. Love the boat, love the space that you got there, but man, when you got your little tower of GoPros, your graph sticking up higher than my normal boat, a couple things to get tangled on, and you also wrestling with the muskie back there that looked quite large. I jabbed that net down, and the biggest part was I did not commit to my initial scoop. And if I did, I think things would have been a little bit better. Or if I wanted to pull back, and I should have just done it right away rather than just a half-ass like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with my hands. And then I was just like, oh. I can't even remember what I say in the video, but it's pretty funny.
In fairness, I about botched Taylor's first Iowa fish, so I'll put myself on blast on that one where he got one to crack a phantom, and honestly, it was so early into the trip that I probably wasn't really ready for it, and then he kind of like brought it to the net, and I did a double take, double guess kind of thing, and hung it weird, and I basically pulled the fish forward and got the rest of the net underneath of it while it was on the on like hung on the net and stuck to the phantom. It was not good, but we got the fish, and that's all that matters.
We're all
Hey,
still
that's
friends.
great.
Every net job is perfect as long as the fish makes it into the bag.
True.
They don't have to be pretty.
But yeah, as long as we're still friends, I'm still friends with my brother. We're still fishing together in tournaments. So all is well. All right, I figured it out. I forgot to click an audio thing. So we're getting into the on the line segment. As I said before, we got poorly made musky memes with them. Let's let her rip. Should be all good now.
Hey guys, poorly made musky memes again. I have a question regarding LiveScope. So, what megahertz do you have to run the LiveScope on to make the muskies jump directly in the boat so that you don't have to sharpshoot at them? Thanks. I'll be hanging up so I can hear your answer.
Right, Taylor, since the Facebook warriors say that you obviously have a live scope, which you don't, we touched on that. What's the megahertz? Spill the beans.
We actually got a you got a bowfish for them. That's what makes them jump in the boat. If you stick them with an arrow, that's the thing to do. I have no idea what megahertz people you run on their live scope or whatever they do. I have nothing for you.
I don't even know if that's enough, but that's pretty funny. Sorry, poorly.
Twelve
Either a harpoon
megahertz.
gun, or I'm not quite sure.
Dynamite.
Dynamite. All right, well, let's let the other one rip from Poorly Made.
Hey guys, Poorly Made Musky Memes calling in once again. I have a statement I'd like to make. Regarding musky season, I don't know if you all have noticed or not, but when muskies start biting, the season starts getting hot. It starts getting more worth getting out on the water and getting after it. Have you noticed that that is also the time of year when tornadoes start? And do you believe that the cause of these tornadoes during that season is because of all the people out there doing figure eights, maybe the people trolling in circles as well?
Trolling in circles might cause the big tornadoes out there, but maybe those just little guys ripping across the state of Iowa is probably mad over there doing all his figure eights and getting
Trying to
them
think of
going.
like something clever to say because like that's just so funny. It's definitely not the musky guys. It's probably like bank yankers getting turned around or hill people coming down and putting their John boats in the water, cutting me off would be my guess. I don't know.
Anything, Taylor? Muskies, tornadoes. Do we have another series of like Sharknado movies except for muskies?
I don't know. I think he's definitely onto something. Like the eye of a hurricane is probably a really, really well executed figure eight.
Jesus. Oh, that's too
No,
good.
it would be a figure oval. I've never seen a hurricane in the shape of an eight.
That would be a wild one. Absolute wild one. Well, thank you, Poorly Made, for sending those in. As always, you can DM the Muskies on Tap page or message myself, which is 920-264-3816. Also find it on my website. But we will continue the on the line segment through and through the summer and hope to get some more in. I'm sure we'll get some maybe calls in for before opener with questions or more funny things. If they need advice, we kind of opened it up to everything. So we're very happy with where this on the line segment has kind of gone. So if you got something to say, be sure to send it in. I know there's people that message with me saying like, "Oh, I want to send one in, but I just don't know how to word it or whatever." It's like, "Nah, just send it in. We'll take it. We'll take
I
it."
know
But
after being down in Iowa with Gus for a week, I can shout out Phil Stadola and say that Gus Manthey does indeed wake up with a white monster in his hand.
that's right. That's right. Many mornings I did. Not every morning I do. It's not always the same morning or a good morning, but when there's a white monster in my hand, I'm quite happy to go musky fishing. So
Gus, I've got a question. What
yeah.
happened to the F this bait segment as we're talking about segments? Like you guys
F
did it
this
twice
bait
and then it.
segment.
Yeah.
What was the second one I did? Because I think the first time I did Fuck That Bait might have been a phantom,
I
honestly.
believe it was. I believe that it
No.
was.
Yeah, it was. Oh man, yeah, that's right. Good times. Good times. Yeah, I think
Dude,
I talked
that.
about so my way I described, Fuck That Bait was that I went down to Iowa late March, way the first time I was musky fishing that year. All the new shiny baits from all the expos, and I'm throwing all the baits out there. They look great. They look great. They're doing their things. I'm like, oh my God, these are gonna catch fish. And then boom, my first Iowa muskie comes on a phantom that I've had for a while, of course, of all the baits. It wasn't the new fancy one from somebody else or whatnot. It just had to be the phantom. And I only brought it because of Taylor. The fact that I knew that you crushed on phantoms down there. So I'm like, well, I suppose I better put one in the box and use it when things get tough. Things got tough. Boom. Fish on the phantom. Fuck that bait. Catches muskies.
That phantom is such a good bait for that time of year, and any like cold front in the summertime or fall time or whatever, that 6-inch phantom softtail. I mean, when I caught that one on at Gus in the morning, I pretty much picked it up and said, if I don't catch a bait or catch a fish on this, we might as well fucking go home, because that's how much
Yeah.
confidence that I have in that bait. So, if that tells you anything about how I like to run.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, Matt. I don't know why that really went away. I feel like
It's a
well,
great
I mean,
segment.
I don't want to throw him under the bus or anything just because he's not here, but we can because he's not here. But Brian's usually the manager of this whole podcast. He always keeps notes and all that good stuff.
So
Totally,
what's the
100%.
over-under on the F this bait segment coming back?
Well, we'll just see how opener goes, I think we'll get somebody on the hot seat if they're really pissed about a bait or something like that, or I don't know. No
Usually,
one's safe out there in the muskie industry.
my F this bait scenarios are much more akin or similar to yours, where it's like something just unexpected. Like you tell Connor in Canada that like the little sister is a great topwater bait, and he's like, "Oh, can I try one or can I try yours?" And he's like throwing this Lake X, fat bastard that's like doing circles. I'm like, "Connor, that thing's dead. Throw the little sister." So I give it to him, and he catches four fish in like 20 minutes, and I get one on a bucktail. It's like, why? That would be my
F that bait.
F this bait segment. Why did I give it to Connor? Maybe I should,
Yeah.
yeah, maybe it's more of an F myself. I don't know.
Taylor, you got an addition for fuck that bait this week, or are we gonna kind of leave it for another time?
I'll give a fuck Gus's bait, that one that we tested before waters meet that literally looked like
Oh,
a turd coming through the water. That was
sure.
terrible.
Yep. I'm sure I'll now get messages. Oh, what's that bait? What's that bait? All right. Well,
Pretty sure I know which
everyone,
one you guys are talking about, and
everyone, chill out.
I agree with Taylor's sentiment.
Fuck that bait.
No one's safe out there. No one's safe. Oh man, is there anything else that you guys want to touch on? I know we kind of went into this super open-minded, mainly just breaking down. As a whole, really, if you and just pretty much post-spawn muskies wherever you go in the muskie range. But any closing thoughts, questions, concerns, something to pump, anything? I know, obviously. Well, I'll just pump it for you, Matt. You got a YouTube channel. You've been around the block
I do.
for quite some time now, putting out some great muskie content on Matt Vavrock
Thank you.
Fishing. So, I know you'll have some more exciting stuff. You do more than that. You also get bait makers on and kind of chat with them, typically over the winter, but you do record
Yeah.
those, right? And post them.
Yeah, I mean
And,
they're all those conversations are on my
yeah.
YouTube channel under the like live tab. It's just something I enjoy doing. It's a good way to have a good conversation with dudes who do things unique in the industry that, not everyone enjoys going on camera and talking about themselves or their products, but it's just a way that I can provide some help in my small way to those guys and hopefully get them a little bit more exposure in that way. Yeah, I don't know. And then it might just bring, people who don't know about those things to a new audience. Like I know like Duke Stoser spinnerbaits would be one of them where he, some people didn't really know about those until I, had a conversation with him on the live. So he does great work and yeah, I don't know. I hope that
Yeah,
makes sense.
no, that does. He's got awesome stuff, and you've had plenty of people on that. I think you found your little niche, as you call it, on smaller bait makers, kind of highlighting them and using their stuff, catching fish on them, showing them that they're not just shiny objects that are potentially, more expensive, but they're handcrafted and handmade or hand poured by, the very own people that you are having on your YouTube. And I think that's pretty neat to see. I mean, there's a lot of musky baits out there that catch fish, and if you want to be a little bit different, definitely check out Matt's channel. He's got a lot of stuff on some baits that maybe you haven't heard of, any, ever changing. You have some that you are absolute staples. Like I know you've been throwing the Matt Ridgway's baits for a long time. That's an absolute staple from you, and Matt, other Matt. And but then there's other baits that are brand new and you highlight them, and I think that's pretty darn cool.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the only curse with that situation is I can only throw one at a time, unless I got other guys in the
That's
boat.
true.
But
That is very true. Unfortunate, but the way it is. I don't know if you rifle baits at the speed of Brian, throwing him under the bus again. You could go through the entire Wausau show in like 2 days, so
no, I usually queue up what I think is going to work or will likely work in a given time on the water, and I don't change baits very often. I think this weekend I changed baits three times, twice. No, three times. I started with the mini bow fin, went to the swim fin, and when that swim fin got clipped, I went to a Ridgeway. That was all I threw all weekend.
Yeah, makes for a cleaner boat as well. So,
Yeah, and honestly, like usually when I have clients in the boat, they're pretty good about that. Like I appreciated my guys this weekend sticking to their guns, and the one kid that got one, I had him throwing
nice.
a chatterbait and he pretty much just threw the chatterbait all day. And I was like, it's just something different that they don't see. And he got one on it, so that was cool. But he threw that thing all day long, didn't ask questions about it. He just did it and put his faith in me. So that was appreciated. I know that's not always the case, and I definitely asked him if he was getting bored, and he's like, "No, I like this." I was like, "Okay, man, whatever. That works for me. I think you should keep checking it."
Got
So,
to have confidence
yeah.
in it. That's cool. Before I get to Mr. Taylor, do you have, I know you do dabble in a little guiding. Do you have anything open that maybe a Mott listener might be interested in? Maybe just say to message yourself.
Yeah, just you can shoot me a message on Instagram, Facebook, or those are probably the easiest ways to get a hold of me. I do email as well, but usually Facebook Messenger and Instagram is the easiest way. If you want to get a hold of me, then I'll get you my number through those means. And then the reason I don't like giving my number out is, like, being an educator, then students listen and then they get my number if I don't want them to have it. So that's why I try and avoid doing that. But anyway, but yeah, if you shoot me a message on Messenger or on Instagram, I would be glad to get people in the boat. My springtime stuff is pretty, I think I've got like one trip yet to do this spring, and I'm gonna probably take it pretty easy until the Northwoods. But I have some availability in the Northwoods as well as in the fall down here. So this is the first year I'm going to try and guide a little bit in Hayward. I've got a handful of dates that I've got booked already, and some availability yet if people want to hop in with me there. So I'm excited to try that. Yeah, I don't know. Appreciate it, Gus. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about that stuff.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, if you're up in the Northwoods of Hayward area, hit up Matt if you're looking to get in the boat with him. Maybe do a little filming or something like that. But Taylor, I know you've been sitting there quietly in the dark. This time he is in his truck instead of his cold basement that the Wi-Fi sometimes shoots out of in past podcasts. But you got something to plug. What you got?
First off, I would like to defend everyone's favorite bait changer, Mr. Brian, because Gus was a terrible, terrible bait changer. Like, I mean, maybe 10 casts with a bait and he was switching out to something different. So it's not just Brian, it's also Gus. So Gus has got, or Brian's got a little bit of ammunition for Gus.
Can I
All right,
defend
shut
myself a
up.
little bit here?
No.
Okay, fine. That's all right. Spidey
Yeah,
senses were
but
tingling that day.
absolutely, and it paid off. I think you actually caught a fish right after on the baby beaver when you switched to that after three casts with something else. So you hit it right.
I guess
But
so. I guess so.
Yeah. But no, my stuff is Muskie Guarantee Guide Service. I do a lot of my stuff through Facebook. I'm posting every single day videos, bloopers, tips and tricks, stories guiding in northern Wisconsin. Just try to be informative as I can. People shoot me a message all the time, and whatever bite I'm kind of on, I am willing to offer up that information. If you guys are coming to the Northwoods and just looking to get out, that's something I feel that is my job as a fishing guide. It's not to be as secretive as possible. So feel free to reach out and I will try to help you as best I can. Obviously, not a lake or specific body of water, but kind of the bite I'm on. Otherwise, you can call or text 715-490-5088. And I also have a website, www.muskieguaranteeguideservice.com, and I do not get on there very often. The cell phone or Facebook is where to get me quickly. I do have about 3/4 of my schedule filled up for 2025 season, but if you would like to get out with me in the Northwoods, feel free to shoot me a message and we can figure out a date for you.
Awesome. That's great. And remember, folks, the number that he gave you is not the Mott line. That is the Taylor Flannery guarantee line. So, and, but if you want to send in an audio message to Taylor, feel free. You can always just send it to us. But, no, I already said earlier what the on the line segment is to send it. But, guys, thank you very much for coming on here and kind of being the co-host. I wouldn't even say that you were guests. We all, swung around some questions to each other, and it was like a mini round table. Of course, we were, we missed Brian and Max on here, but they'll be back another week or next week or who knows. This is a great chat, I think, and very informative. I think this is one of the first real informative Muskie podcasts we've had on the 2025 season, because we did a lot of storytelling this past winter, having guests on and doing, old time stories, or getting guests on that guides that have been around the game for a really long time. And but now we're in the swing of things, and the whole premise of this podcast from the start of it, that Max, Brian, and I wanted to start, was basically like a weekly report of the Northwoods, and now it's kind of growing into, what the hell is the bite anywhere you go? So what's going on in the Muskie range? Thank you all for coming on here again. I can't thank Matt and his family enough for hosting us in Iowa. Very gracious. Taylor, had a blast sharing the boat with you. As much as we talked about how we, chatted about the bite and got kind of serious and really dialed in patterns, we had a lot of fun and a lot of laughs in there as well, because you can't always just take it too seriously. Gotta have fun with it. If you're getting too serious and you're not having fun, then you should probably stop doing it. So, had a blast.
No doubt about it, dude. Appreciate you guys. It was awesome having you down this spring. Cannot wait to do it again.
Yep, can't wait either. All right, well, you guys take care, and we're signing off. No outro this week from Brian, so we'll catch you on the next one.